This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Donnell Rehagen, CEO of Clean Fuels Alliance America. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back at controlweedsnotfarming.com. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Donnell Rehagen next. Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization sub-agency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back at controlweedsnotfarming.com. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. After members of Clean Fuels Alliance America spent last week on Capitol Hill, the USDA finalized the Production of Regenerative Agricultural Biofuel Feedstocks Rule and provided an updated version of the USDA Feedstock Carbon Intensity Calculator. Donnell Rehagen, CEO of Clean Fuels Alliance America, says that rule provides U.S. farmers practical guidelines to implement regenerative agriculture practices and to calculate additional value from providing feedstock to domestic biodiesel, renewable diesel, and SAF producers. Rehagen says the industry is poised to move forward.
I think there's a lot of industry out there that would love to have more of our fuels than what they've been able to get. I'm thinking of the rail industry, the marine industry, the heating oil industry, which are more emerging markets for us. A lot of our fuel continues to go into the on-road market, and that's great. We're trying to expand these markets so that our fuel producers have more opportunities out there that then trickles down to the feedstock growers and processors. So I'm confident the demand for the fuel is there, but we can't really make everything work without federal policy being in sync with that growing demand. And so it's just important for us as a trade association. We're just expected to deliver that certainty in policy that supports the growth that the industries are coming through in demanding more and more of our fuel.
In our discussion, let's talk about the legislation that has given you legs. Is there a need for any change in specific legislation regarding clean fuels?
Well, legislatively, the first and foremost policy is the renewable fuel standard. And as I said, we have that in place for 26 and 27. But we're halfway through 26 already. So 28, where we don't have an RVO set, is not that far away. And that's important when you're thinking about long-term investments. Think about a crush plant, Jeff. I mean, you're talking 3, 4, 5 years in the planning and completion of that. So getting a longer-term RVO out in front of this industry, something to add on to 26 and 27, maybe 28, 29 and 30. That could be a huge signal, to the industry to continue invest more and produce more. So that's on the RFS front. And then of course, 45Z is our new tax credit. It's very different from what the industry had the previous 20 years. So at some point, the industry, we're still sorting through some of that, but providing that clarity there so that the industry knows how this new credit works. It's built around carbon intensity of feedstocks and fuels. The value of the credit depends on which feedstock you make to use to make which fuel. So it's gotten much more complicated. But having certainty in that credit, as I mentioned, that credit is in place through 2029. So again, being able to push that out a little longer, push the RFS out a little bit longer prospectively, those would be the two biggest federal policy initiatives we'd be after.
What about the GREET model? Is that creating more clarity in the carbon intensity of the fuels you provide?
Yeah, that was absolutely one of the biggest accomplishments we've had over the last year, getting Congress to realize that the indirect land use change component of that GREET calculation, which is the calculating mechanism for the carbon intensity score of our fuels and our feedstocks, that indirect land use change penalty, which suggests that, geez, you know, if you incentivize too much soybean production, farmers are just going to cut down all these trees and plant soybeans everywhere, and that would be bad. So that's the indirect land use change penalty. We believe at Clean Fuels there's an element of junk science in that. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. We know here in the United States, we're growing more soybeans on fewer acres. So land use change is not an issue for this industry. And so we were very happy to have been able to get Congress to see that. And the most recent changes to that 45Z tax credit under the One Big Beautiful Bill totally eliminated the indirect land use change penalty. Now, Jeff, the result of that is soybean oil receives basically double the credit it would have gotten had that indirect land use change penalty remained. So as a feedstock going into biodiesel production, soybean oil is now worth, from a credit perspective, somewhere around 65 cents. With the indirect land use change penalty, it was only worth about 32 cents. So that was a huge change that needed to be made, and we were happy to help deliver that.
Will those also be available for other oilseed crops like canola?
Well, that's the other good news about the change. This eliminating the indirect land use change penalty allowed canola to get to make its way into the 45Z credit. Before that, canola had zero credit value in the 45Z credit. So now it is a welcome feedstock, and it's probably set to have some of the most growth potential in our industry because of its growing availability, but also its growing value when you look at it from a carbon intensity perspective.
Some people don't look forward to April because of the three letters IRS. But if we look at April for Clean Fuels Alliance America, I have to believe that was a positive time for you. As Administrator Lee Zeldin agreed that previous RVO numbers were too low and opened the gate for you to be able to flex your wings and realize potential.
You're exactly right. We waited a long time, but we did finally get this RVO around the 1st of April. And what it did was it increased the volume in 2026 by 2 billion gallons from the volume that was set in 2025. And so to give you some perspective, the 2025 volume was 3.35 billion. Our volume in 2026 is 5.4 billion. A huge jump. And the reason that was so important, Jeff, was because over the last 3 or 4 years, this industry has darn near doubled its production capacity. And we're now have production capacity in the United States for biodiesel, renewable diesel of about 7 billion gallons. So when we have an RVO that's 3.5 even in a 7 billion gallon capacity, you can see what happens there. So by pushing that RVO up the way they have, they've recognized two things. They've recognized, oh, your fuel production capacity has grown. You can make this much fuel. But they've also acknowledged, and this is important, they've also acknowledged they believe, the EPA believes, there are feedstocks available to meet these volumes. And the reason that's important is because historically, the EPA, that's been their biggest reason why they have not increased the volumes before. So they've changed their mind, and they've now said, we see it. We understand it. Soybean crush has expanded. The marketplace is seeing new feedstocks, increase availability of distillers corn oil. There's more canola production available. So they've seen what we've been trying to tell them, and so we're definitely aimed in the right direction.
What about the numbers for 27?
27, they gave us a slight bump in 2027, so from 5.4 billion to 5.7 billion in 2027. And the way the RFS works, it does get quite complicated. We have some potential to produce in excess of that volume for various reasons, and so we will not be at all surprised to see our actual production this year be somewhere closer to 6 billion gallons, and for sure next year be definitely in that 6 billion gallon range. And so we're excited about that opportunity. We're already seeing it in soybean prices. We're seeing it in soybean oil prices. We're seeing it in RIN prices. So the marketplace is seeing the same thing we are. Hey, demand just jumped exponentially. We need to produce more fuel. Therefore, we need to buy a whole lot more feedstock.
Okay, so Donnell, in the figment of our listeners' minds and in yours and mine, let's use the audio whiteboard here. And on one side of a triangle, let's put feedstocks. And on the other side, let's look at capacity of existing industry. And then the third leg of that triangle would be industry demand. Do you have enough feedstocks? Do you have enough capacity? And is there demand for the product that you would produce? Can you meet the numbers that are here now?
Yeah, well, I'll start with the back end of that. I think the industry demand for our fuels is much greater than where we're producing and where we have been producing for sure. So when you look at emerging markets, we have like the rail industry. That's about a 4 billion gallon a year diesel industry. They're looking to decarbonize to some level. So let's just assume they started using 20% biodiesel. That's a billion gallons almost. And so then you look at the marine industry. So ocean going vessels and, brown water vessels. That is a massive market as well. And so you add that to the on-road market, which is about 40 billion gallons a year. There is plenty of demand for these fuels. So what's always held the customers back many times we would hear is, hey, I would really like to use that fuel, but where do I find it? How can I get it? That we're beginning to answer that question by pushing 6 billion gallons into the marketplace instead of 3.5 billion gallons into the marketplace. There are now going to be markets who've been wanting these fuels. Maybe they couldn't find them. Definitely going to be much more plentiful. So the demand for the fuel is there. The feedstock to produce this volume, the EPA themselves have said, we believe that feedstock is there. They've gone through extensive studies. Now, you know, our domestic soybean growers, they are our biggest supplier. But when you look at what soybean oil is available in the United States that doesn't go into the food industry, because we don't want to take that from them. They're great customers and always have been for soy. But when you take what's left after that, there's about, maybe if we could get into the ballpark of 3 billion gallons of our fuel that we could make with all of that remaining soybean oil. So that's when you start looking at distillers corn oil. We're seeing more ethanol production, therefore there's more distillers corn oil available. We're seeing more canola being grown and processed, and so there's more canola oil. Used cooking oil probably, you know, is about where it's going to be all the time. Animal fat, probably the same situation. And so really for us to grow a lot more, we're going to continue to rely on soybean oil as being that primary feedstock. Yep. And then from the fuel production side, as I mentioned, we have about 7 billion gallons of domestic biodiesel, renewable diesel, SAF production capacity. So that is not a question either. So we're looking forward to putting all that together and firing up these plants and firing up these processing plants to send all that feedstock. And we're looking forward to all of that.
You know, I remember the conversation a short few years ago that someday we'll start crushing the soybean for the oil instead of the meal. And that's a major paradigm shift. The other paradigm shift is to make fuel for airplanes. And sustainable aviation fuel is one that seems to be an ocean of demand, but also an ocean and a mountain to have to traverse to be able to make it affordable and make it work. Donnell, is that a pipe dream, or is that something that your industry sees as certainly a possibility?
Yeah, it is absolutely not a pipe dream. The airlines have always contended they would want to and like to use more. Again, where do I get it? How do I get it? Don't quote me on this, but I want to say last year in the U.S., there was about 400 million gallons of sustainable aviation fuel produced. That's not insignificant, but it's not a large piece of the overall demand for jet fuel. And so there is a lot of potential for that industry to grow out. We just got to bring together all those economics again. The airlines they're like everybody else. You know, the prices have to be competitive. And that's sometimes where government support and programs come into play. And so this 45Z tax credit we talked about for biodiesel is eligible for a gallon of sustainable aviation fuel that is produced as well. That production process is obviously a lot more detailed than renewable diesel or biodiesel. Therefore, that fuel is quite a bit more expensive than renewable diesel or biodiesel. And so that's the part that's got to get synced up. But you're exactly right. The demand there would dwarf where we're producing volumes at right now, if we can just get everything in place for the support that it needs.
It sounds like you have enough capacity from the processing industry to make the oil and to provide the stocks that you need to meet the current EPA's targets. But if you're going to grow for SAF, for marine, for rail, for liquid transportation, what do you need from the EPA as a signal to those investors to say, yes, we are growing and we will continue to grow, spend money, and make this capacity possible?
The largest pool of available feedstock still sits inside those soybean pods, right, that we don't process here in the United States. And so you're exactly right. Who needs to see the signals that the clean fuels industry is, it's desired that it grows in 27, 28, 29, 30 and beyond? It's going to be your soybean crushers. They definitely need to see that signal. The growers want to see that same signal, of course, but the big investment is probably going to have to come in soybean crush. Canola processing, obviously, you know, as well, if that continues to grow from the planting side. And so those are going to be the 1-2 punch. As, you know, as we always say, people don't fry more French fries to make biodiesel and they don't grow more pigs to make biodiesel. So those are going to be really the 1-2 punch. And that's where those signals need to be made clear with enough notice, again, that those investments can be made and the processing plants actually, you know, finished. Cause as we said, you know, it's a 2-3-4 year process to go from, yeah, we want to build a crush plant to here we are opening the gates.
So when do you start tapping on Administrator Zeldin's shoulder, and saying, what have you done for me lately? And what about what's ahead?
Yeah, we've been thanking him as you noted. We sent a letter to President Trump and mentioned, Administrator Zeldin, but we've actually started tapping on his door, already, politely, of course. But I think they're as well wanting to see how this RVO, big growth, how does the market respond? You know, does everything stay in its lane and continue to work? I think if we can prove that over a series of months here, I think the conversations with EPA are made a little bit easier, to try to ask for and look for some level of growth in, you know, 2028 and beyond.
Okay. Before we move to taxes, let me bring this in. There's a tremendous push, certainly from farm states to see E15 approved. And, I am told by Steve Sinske, the CEO of the American Soybean Association, they don't oppose E15. But what their concern is, and I believe perhaps you're concerned as well, of these small refinery exemptions and how that may ultimately impact the numbers that the EPA have suggested.
You know, the E15 has been something the corn growers and the ethanol industry, this has been the tippy top of their list of needs for, you know, probably a decade. So we certainly support them in getting that done. Also, to some degree, for us as a sister clean fuel industry, we sort of always get drug into the debate about year-round E15. It always becomes part of a negotiating, it's a leveraging piece. And that's what we're seeing here now, right, is in order to get E15, some of the refiners are wanting to have some clarity around their greater ability to get small refinery exemptions. And so, of course, we're not happy about that. That's gallons likely that comes out of the biomass-based diesel side of the equation. But at the same time, we're all part of the big agriculture family here, and we want to make sure that, you know, we're looking at the greater good. We can't just necessarily look at just us in this moment in time. There's an opportunity here that's being presented today that has not been presented before for year-round E15. And Clean Fuels Alliance America, although we will suffer to some degree for it, we will not get in the way of that happening.
So from the tax perspective, 45Z is different than what you had before. What information do you have now that you can work with? And are there mystery pieces that need to be resolved to give you clarity moving ahead?
Yeah, definitely on 45Z, it's very complex compared to what we had before. There's much of moving pieces in there. And so as it made its way through the IRA bill and then the One Big Beautiful Bill, there were changes that were made. And of course, those changes that were made were very much desired by our industry, very much desired by the soybean growers and processors as well. And so we're happy about where things are with 45Z today, but it still remains a much more complex thing to deal with in the marketplace than what we had before. So the marketplace is figuring all that out.
U.S. Farmers and Ranchers in Action commissioned a study, and I'll just paraphrase to shortly that if we don't create demand for corn, for soybeans, if we don't create demand for crops, then we're not going to need as many crops, and the price overall is going to be a challenge, and that's going to affect income in rural America. I see opportunity for agriculture to grow, but it really depends on creating new demand. Do you think the renewable fuel industry can create that demand, Donnell?
I do. I absolutely do. You know, as I've said, there's plenty of untapped markets on the biomass based diesel side. I don't think I've even mentioned the heating oil industry. And so I think the demand for the fuels is the potential is limitless, as far as it relates to our production capacity. And so I also believe that with the right signals that there is intention that this country continue to produce more renewable fuels, which is going to use more feedstocks and creating that economic benefit in rural America. I mean, just think about these crush plants as an example. I mentioned the crushers have spent $6 billion to expand crush. Well, they didn't expand that crush in Chicago or Detroit, right? I mean, they expanded that crush mostly in rural America. They created jobs there during construction and long-term ongoing jobs at those plants. That and that alone is a huge benefit to rural America, much less the every bushel benefit that our soybean farmers or canola farmers would see from increased value of their feedstock. So we touch a lot of industries. And I think that's what that S&P study that the farmers and ranchers put out said. This is a huge economic impact engine for rural America and for agriculture, and it should be encouraged to grow. And I will say I to exactly what that study said.
The tax policy did not deny used cooking oil and other feedstocks from around the world, but it didn't give the same advantage that it had had previously.
That's true, and that's under the 45Z tax credit. Under that One Big Beautiful Bill, there was a ring fence of sorts drawn around that credit. So that credit is only available for feedstocks that are grown and processed in either Canada, the United States, or Mexico, so USMCA. And so we're seeing the outcome of that right now. We're seeing very, very much less on the imported feedstock front, very much increased demand of domestic feedstocks. I think that's exactly what was desired. Now, what it does is it doesn't slam the door on imported feedstocks. And Jeff, that's kind of important to our industry because, as I said, we've got a 6 billion gallon number in front of us from the RFS, and domestic feedstocks maybe total about 4 billion gallons worth. Soy being the biggest part of that. And so we're going to need imported feedstocks because, God forbid, if we can't find that, we're going to end up getting imported fuel. And that's not a positive component to a growing RFS, is filling that with imported fuel. Obviously, that imported fuel would be made from foreign feedstocks, but it would also be made at foreign plants with foreign workers. So we would much rather, if we were going to have to import something, we'd much rather have to import feedstock than finished fuel. And so it is a component going forward as we look down the road beyond 6 billion gallons in an RFS. Again, those signals of growth will incentivize investment that we can start to see more domestic feedstock produced here in the United States that we can use.
Well, Donnell Rehagen, we appreciate the work that your industry has done to provide opportunity, not only for your industry to grow, but for farmers across the country. This is Open Mic, Donnell, and you have the last word today.
Well, Jeff, you said it right. I mean, it's us all in conjunction with our nation's farmers and agriculture. We were founded by our nation's soybean farmers over 30 years ago. They had a vision of an industry that might look like this. Probably a dream of an industry that would be this big and using this kind of their feedstocks and providing this kind of opportunity for them. We at Clean Fuels are very proud to partner with the agricultural partners we have to continue to grow this industry, to continue to create more economic benefit to rural America and our farmers. And I applaud them every day and thank God for them and their willingness to do what they do. And we're just proud to be a part of helping them along.
Our thanks to this week's guest, Donnell Rehagen, CEO of Clean Fuels Alliance America, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back at controlweedsnotfarming.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Dowling.